Hi, it's producer Chris from The Bugle here. Did you know that I have a new series of my podcast, Richie Firth Travel Hacker, out now? It's the show where Richie Firth and I talk about how to make travel better in our very special way. In this series, we discuss Lime Bikes, Teslas, the London Overground, and a whole bunch of other random stuff that possibly involves wheels or tracks or engines of some variety. God, what a hot sell this is. I mean, you must be so excited. Listen now.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is a podcast from The Bugle.
Commercial shuttle flights are the worst. Nobody tells you how much people stink in space, but a job's a job, and your job is mining asteroids for the Muskeberg Corporation on a low-wage, zero-hour contract. And you can't really complain, because every bit you mine goes towards building the future of the human race, the future of The Goggle. Hello, this is The Goggle, the sonic glossy magazine to The Bugle's audio newspaper for visual world. All of the news, none of the politics. I'm your host, Alice Fraser, and your guest editors for this week's edition of the magazine are Ian Smith. Welcome.
Hello. I regretted how I said that.
Hi.
We can go back. We can retake it. How would you prefer to have said that?
I don't know. I find saying hello, the initial hello on a podcast, is quite hard.
Yeah.
Essentially, it's the putting your hand in front of the horse's nose or the dog's nose so that it can, like, sniff it. It's just so that people know that this is the sound of your voice.
Oh, okay.
Right? Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
I say Ian Smith, and then you go, map, and that's how they know that that's the noise that you're going to make from now on.
Oh,
so
good.
So they don't get you confused with Eleanor Morton, who makes the other kind of noise.
Hello.
Okay. Oh, that was quite similar to mine.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be an impressive intro. You don't need to come in all guns blazing.
Oh, thank God for that.
But you're nailing it.
Just a low hum. Yeah. My voice confirms my identity. Before we begin beating our hands against the drum circle that is this week's top stories, let's have a look at the front cover of this week's magazine. The front cover this week is King Charles honouring BTS at the Korean state banquet this week, saying that they were Korea's match to the Beatles, which, yes, they are an inconceivably popular band of young men who make music, but I think there are some points of distinction that can be made in both the pros and cons direction. Like, for example, you know, I feel like the Beatles came together in a slightly more organic way and were less sort of farmed from a crop of desperate young hopefuls. And on the other hand, I don't think the Beatles could dance the way BTS can dance on, like, 12 calories a day. The satirical cartoon this week has been censored for hate speech because it failed to contain in a single panel cartoon the entire nuanced and multifaceted evils of every current conflict, political kerfuffle and or social injustice, for which the political cartoon of this week apologises, knowing that apology is and always will be inadequate and promising to learn and grow from this shame to tunity. Top stories this week. Ransomware apparently acting for good. Is it good when evil people do possibly good things? One of the most active ransomware groups in the world has reported one of its victims to the US Securities and Exchange Commission in a sort of a, I guess it's blackmail. Is the technical term blackmail for this?
Mm.
Ian Smith, you've thrown bricks through windows before. Can you unpack this story for us?
Yes. I mean, I guess maybe I'm not taking it as seriously as the company that have had the ransomware delivered to them, but I just think it's quite funny. It's a funny crime, I think, where my understanding is that they've sort of delivered some kind of computer virus to a company, and then they're aware of a new regulation which says if a breach has been made where customer information has been breached and privacy has kind of been broken, you have to report it within 4 days, and they haven't. So then they've reported the company, or they threatened to report the company. So it's a bit like stealing a business's smoke alarms and then reporting them to the health and safety officer, which I think is just good, innocent fun. I think this is quite fun. Maybe I'm missing some ramifications for this, because at the minute I just think these are some fun little scamps. Is that right?
Yeah, I think fun little scamps is a good way to define the people who are potentially stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars. Part of the job of companies is to keep their customers' data safe. If there is a breach of that data, they are required by law to report that, because it makes their customers less safe and their customers have a right to know that. But of course, there's an incentive for them not to do that, because they don't want everyone to know that they've been compromised. So these sneaky little thieves want to up the pressure on their victims by reporting them for not reporting the crime, essentially. Because part of what the hackers get is like the publicity of hacking them, but also it's punishing these people who are not paying them the money that they're blackmailing them for by showing that they can ruin their reputation.
So they hack them and then they report them. So they don't pre-report them and then hack them.
They hack them, and then within the 4-day limit, then they report them for not reporting that they've been hacked, essentially.
And is this anything to do with the Millennium Bug?
it got us in the end.
I knew that was going to destroy us all.
It's just a matter of time.
Well, the year 3000.
Well, we can't all deliver to deadline, can we? All prime crimes involve reporting the crime to the police at some point as part of the heist, I feel, just to add that extra fillip of, like, are they on the side of good or are they on the side of evil? I've enjoyed this particular story because also I imagine all hackers as wearing those wraparound sunglasses and ankle-length black coats, like in the 90s.
And a Bluetooth headset.
Yeah, whereas I feel like actually in real life, hackers tend to just have increasingly ergonomic chairs.
I always assume they're all 12, but like, I just always picture 12-year-old boys, but maybe they're all sophisticated men in smart suits. I don't know.
I think sophisticated men in smart suits are all 12-year-old boys. That's my theory.
Turned it around.
12-year-old boys sitting in a chair that I can't afford.
Yeah, making more money than you will ever see in esports in some obscure game that you'll never hear of.
Yeah.
The world we live in now.
Is it too late for me to pivot career-wise?
No, I think you'd make a great esports champion.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Your ad section now, because you can't be what you can't buy. And this section of the show is brought to you by knees. Knees, the elbows of the legs. Knees, a bend in the road where the road is your legs. Knees, put the U in genuflect. Knees, don't tell goats they've put them on backwards. Knees, try some today. And this episode of the podcast is brought to you by the newest social media platform. No longer do you need to go to the new money tech bro algorithm wankfest to serve up their heady mix of contemptibly half-coherent political takes, jealousy-inducing boastulence, or froth-fingered rants that are clearly directed misinformation. Now bringing you Yentl, a social media platform where a nice old matchmaker lady curates a selection of posts she thinks your mother will like. Yentl, you haven't been doing that well on your own. Let us take it from here. And this episode of the podcast is brought to you by Extreme Sports, a great way to remind yourself to drink half a glass of water as you sit on the couch.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage,
Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Now it's time for AI news. This is the news of Sam Altman's firing and now, breaking news, rehiring by the board of directors of OpenAI. So Sam Altman is the CEO of OpenAI. If you need any of the terms defined, OpenAI is one of the big players in the AI space, the genesis of ChatGPT. And CEO Sam Altman is a bajillionaire who thinks extremely highly of himself. He was fired by the board. He staged an incredibly impressive counter coup by mobilizing hundreds of his employees, social media. He included recruiting the original coup leader, the person who had originally tried to get him fired, then came in on his side. And he won the support of all of his investors. He was wooed by Microsoft, allegedly two of the board members were the main ones who didn't like him because they were worried that, like Sam Bankman-Fried, he was going to deprioritize safety in the pursuit of AI over everything. Eleanor, you believe in AI over everything. Can you unpack this story for us?
I can't, but I've got ChatGPT to write it for me. No, I haven't. That would have been a funny idea. Is Machiavellian the right phrase for the way this is playing out? Or
I think it is.
Yeah. Do you remember was it this year or last year? There was a Russian general who had a coup against Putin and everyone was like, oh, Putin's going down. And then he got uncooed. It feels a bit like that, where there's a lot of politics happening instead of Russia, it's AI. And I don't know much about Sam Altman, but I don't trust anyone with a computer key in their name. I think that's up for debate on how trustworthy he is. It does seem weird to me that this is a massive story because it's such a, you know, AI is such a valuable thing currently and a big, big thing currently. But it does seem funny to me that all this turmoil and money is going into this whole debacle so that we can all type raccoon dressed as Sherlock Holmes into OpenAI and see what that looks like or... or whatever you want to do with it. I think I understand it.
Yeah, it's been really bad for the reputations of two of the board members in particular, Helen Toner and Tasha McCauley, one of whom is married to Joseph Gordon-Levitt, the actor, and both of whom quite publicly are subscribers to the recently Sam Bankman-Fried reputation-tanked effective altruist movement, which believes in maximising the good for the most number of people, if by the good you mean having a think tank about shooting ourselves to space. But it started very nicely with sort of mosquito nets for children. Anyway, they were worried that he was doing this maximalist, crypto-utopian, hip-slinging, bullish stuff about AI and not actually prioritising the possibility that AI could destroy the world. I don't know. How badly could it go? I literally can't imagine a single thing that could go wrong. Why do bitches hate progress is what I'm saying. Without progress, we wouldn't have universal suffrage. We wouldn't have depleted uranium shells that give both civilians and the soldiers who use them forms of cancer that have never been seen before. Do you want to not have votes or new cancer, ladies? Come on, back off and let the man cook, is what I'm saying. He was sort of fired for mysterious reasons, and people are still not quite sure why, but the reasons have been put forward as either this safety issue, possibly some accusations of assault, or just generally that they didn't like him very much.
It always boils down to such boring things like that, doesn't it? Like workplace harassment or people not liking you. But what it looks like from a distance is like some kind of super villain in a volcano lair. But actually, maybe he just was a bit annoying at work. Like that's it's not very glamorous.
Yeah. I mean, I just am impressed by the like the reputational jujitsu that's made him have people defending him like he's the little man rather than the man with the wealth of a medium large nation state and boss of both the biggest AI engine and the cryptocurrency WorldCoin, which is a sort of a way to cryptoize the idea of universal basic income to make universal basic income even more imaginary and solve all of the job loss problems that we are in the process of creating with AI. Ian, would you fire Sam Altman and would you hire him back?
It's hard to know if you should fire someone when the reason is so vague. Like, at the minute, what I've managed to find is that the board accused him of being not being consistently candid in his communications. Which I don't know what that means. I don't know if that means lying or just withholding information. They've said it in a very polite way. And if it does turn out that there's been some kind of workplace harassment, then that, I don't think that's how you're supposed to describe that. That he hasn't been candid in his communications. It's just such an odd thing that, so my understanding is that there's a board of 6 people and that 4 of them had voted to get rid of him. But then after they did that, one of the 4 said, oh, I regret doing that, which made it a tie. But it had already been decided, which is disappointing because I'd like to know what the tiebreaker round is in a dismissal at a big company. They're usually quite fun rounds, like a kind of team exercise or a tug of war or something. And then Microsoft seemed to give him a position or seemed to hire him, or I guess threaten to hire him, to a point where he would have then have been everyone's boss, including the people who sacked him at one point. But it just feels... I think this is one of the problems with like 24-hour news, that if we'd waited a bit, then we would know what's happened. If it was just the news at 10 every day, you could go, oh, right, well, so this guy was threatened to be sacked, but it's actually all blown over and these are the 2 people who have left. But instead it's like breaking news, this is happening, there's been a huge development. I think we just need less news so that we can just summarize it once it's happened. Or maybe
yes,
even only
if you waited a week, the news
finished
would have been Sam Altman not fired.
And I think with any news story, like yeah, even like big international conflicts like we're seeing at the minute, I'd be quite happy to just not hear about any of it and then maybe in 2 years' time go, oh God, you're not going to believe what's been happening. But it's all sorted now. And by sorted, we mean it's been a huge catastrophe that we've just chosen to keep you unaware of to make you happier.
I feel like you've got your handles on something there, Ian. I think basically we need to slide frictionlessly towards death, and then as we pass through the final gate, someone can tell us what happened.
Yeah.
What he's interested in is AGI, which is artificial general intelligence, which, as far as I can tell, is just what AI is actually meant to be. Like, but what we now call AI isn't really AI, because it's more like a sort of giant smorgasbord of everyone's stuff that we've already created, sort of sicked back out at us. And then he's sort of or OpenAI is trying to get to this level of actual AI. I'm saying AI a lot. And I think I felt like when they talked about the communications thing, it felt like they know that he's got some kind of, they think he's got kind of some kind of big secret, like the code to actual AI, and they're all scared that he's going to use it to, I don't know, like shoot a rocket into space. They're all obsessed with being shot into space, so I say go for it.
It's because they want to mine the moon.
Yeah. Why bother?
Why bother? Leave the moon. Stop fingering the moon.
We've got plenty of cheese already. We don't need more.
One of the articles, when it said what artificial general intelligence is, It said it's basically the idea there will one day be AI tools that will be able to do a number of tasks as well as or better than humans. But I feel like that's here, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a lot of things my computer can do. I'd say my computer can do a number of tasks better than me.
My fridge can keep food colder than I can, and that's been around for years, so...
My pants can keep my legs warmer than my legs can.
Yeah, that's AI, I think.
I think it's AI. I can also hold onto my keys better than my butt crack can. Like, there's so many multifaceted ways in which technology has improved our lives. We really should respect it more.
They always frame AI like we're going to use it to make our lives easier so we can do lots of fun stuff. But what AI is currently doing is doing all the fun stuff so that we can have to do all the bad tasks. Like, AI is writing all the art and films.
I would love to spend my entire day drawing a picture of Elvis as a beaver wearing a top hat.
Exactly.
While AI did my taxes.
Yeah, but for some reason we got it the wrong way around.
And now it's time for your reviews. As you know, each week we ask our guest editors to bring in something to review out of 5 stars. Eleanor, what have you brought in for us this week?
This week I'm reviewing buttons. I'd like to call them zips for the more vintage inclined. I think they are versatile, stylish, and they can bring outfits together or completely ruin them, really, depending on how you use the buttons. And I think one of my favourite things is just how they hold an outfit together, literally and figuratively. You know, they can be used for lots of different things, and I give them a solid 4 stars. They're not as useful or as direct as Velcro or zips, but they are just a bit more personable. So I'm a big fan.
And you're far less likely to catch your penis in a button.
Exactly. You would hope.
It's not impossible.
I find meditating on zips extremely useful because even though I know how they work, I keep having to think about how they work and how incredibly complicated and yet simple and beautiful they are as a piece of technology. Yeah. If I ever think I understand a complex political issue, I'll just look at a zip for a while and be like, no, I'm a f***ing idiot.
Buttons are classic. Buttons are timeless. You know, we've been using buttons for a long time and I don't think they're going away. So I really want to champion that.
Even buttons, though, I think at first, they're pretty magical. You've got to get a thing through a hole that sort of doesn't fit through the hole, but does if you squeeze it a little bit, but that then doesn't easily get back through the hole. Otherwise, nothing would
works,
be pointless.
Yeah. And think about all the historical moments that would have been ruined if buttons hadn't been there.
Before buttons. I mean, you think about the technologies that we had before buttons, which was the thing where you would get a jar full of nuts and you'd get a monkey to put its hand into the jar and grab the fistful of nuts.
Mm.
And then it would refuse to let go of the nuts and so its hand wouldn't come back out of the jar. That's what buttons used to be.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's a lot of monkeys to have in your shirt.
Yeah, so. And who wants that?
I think Henry VIII would have probably been a lot less violent if his trousers kept falling down. When he was trying to condemn
point.
His wives to death. I demand you be... Oh, God. And then he's just got to pull him back up. What were you going to say? No, it doesn't matter.
Ian, what have you brought in to review for us?
So I've sort of written this like a review on Amazon. This is a traumatic experience. I bought some Hellmann's tomato sauce as opposed to Heinz tomato sauce. So what I wrote was... this is a product that doesn't really stand out either way when compared to the leading brand. In fact, I would say the taste is almost exactly the same. However, the shame of having it is enough to affect your mood repeatedly. The saving of £1.15 was not worth the damage it did to my self-esteem to have bought it. And then you're reminded of the shame every single time you use it, which is frustrating because tomato sauce lasts ages. So in the future, I'll be paying more for the same amount of something that tastes exactly the same. To avoid how this product makes me feel, and I've given it 2 out of 5. just feel humiliated to...
It's fair.
Yeah, I just look at it, it's like £4.50 for a bottle of ketchup, which seems mad. So I got the cheaper Hellman's one and then just felt like I was putting stuff over it in my basket because I didn't want people to see.
I didn't know Hellman's did ketchup and now I feel really stupid. Of course they do.
You're living in blissful ignorance. Okay.
We'll forget you ever said it.
Yeah, they're the mayo people.
Yeah.
Stick to mayo is what a lot of people were shouting at me in the supermarket. Yeah, I found it to be a horrible experience. I don't know if I'm overreacting, but it's pretty distressing for me.
No, your feelings are valid, Ian, particularly in the reviews section. Now it's time for Just the Tip Bats news. This is the news that bats have been banging without putting it in. Ian, you understand Tetris. Can you unpack this story for us?
Yeah. Well, it's one of those stories where someone talks about some research they've done, and it's quite easy to say, why have people been researching that? And I don't know if that's maybe lazy comedically to go, why are we researching that and not these things? But I will repeat, why are we researching bat sex? The fact that there are any diseases still left is the fault of the people who are watching these bats making love. It just feels to me like I can understand if you're researching like the mating rituals of pandas because they're not sort of getting it on enough. But bats, there's no shortage of bats. They've just sort of caused a pandemic. I don't know why we can't just sort of blissfully go, they're having sex, and however they're doing it, absolutely fine. Let's focus on the, if I'm allowed to say this phrase, the non-f***ing animals. Yeah, but there's some horrible sentences in this. I didn't enjoy the description of the... the quote, the male's erect penis is enormous and ends with a heart-shaped head that is 7 times wider than the female's vagina. I don't like reading that or picturing it. The image I've got in my head, I know it's got a heart shape at the end. It's quite nice, but it's still not ideal.
It's not the optimal Valentine's gift. Eleanor, have you been following this bat sex story for a while or is this new
to you? I've got an alert on my search engine. I think it's just important to remind everyone that this research has proved and shown that sometimes there is such a thing as too big, and that can be detrimental to everyone's enjoyment and reproductive efficiency. What I was picking up from this is that the bats come out of it absolutely covered in various fluids. I assume they eventually find their way to the place they need to be. But I mean, have you ever seen slugs mating? I have seen it in my garden. I didn't search it out, but it was happening. And, that is quite similar actually. They're also hanging upside down. Slugs are hermaphrodites though. So they each have a penis that sort of joins together. And, it's definitely more effective than this, but I feel like physically, it looks pretty similar. But what I like is that, first of all, the research was almost impeded by the fact that one of the researchers sent the other one some stuff and it went in his spam folder because it had the word penis in it, which is funny. It was only saved when the researchers saw the Latin name for the Ceratin bat, which is classic. But
saved by Latin. The number of times I've been saved by Latin.
Haven't we all? But this sort of reminds me of another story from, I don't know if the Bugle covered it a while ago. Like Ian was asking, why do we research these things? And I think it's almost like, why didn't we research it before? You know, why didn't we know how bats have sex? You'd assume we would have figured it out by now. They've been around for as long as we have, maybe longer. But there was an article, was it this year or last year? It was last year, about how scientists have only just discovered that female snakes do have clitorises, which, according to the BBC, shatters a long-held assumption that the females didn't have a sexual organ. And this was all over the news because it was hilarious to think about. But also the fact that basically what happened, which could have happened here as well, is that male researchers were too awkward about all of this to ever do any proper research into what the genitals of female snakes are like. And they just left it. They were just, they've got whole biological anatomy textbooks all about snakes, hundreds of years worth of research, but they were all like, we're not doing that bit, that's weird, we'll just leave that bit, we'll assume she's got something. And then a female researcher had to go and do all the dirty work, so to speak. So I wonder if this is someone else looking at the textbooks and going, the problem is that our scientists have been too prudish in the past, and that's how we don't know what we should know.
It's entirely possible, and it means hundreds of years of having missed the opportunity to call them clitter hisses for snakes.
Yeah, you go, you see? Oh, oh my God, it says they have two individual clitters. Sorry, this is the snakes. But anyway, I don't know how much we can say clitorises, even scientifically.
I mean, snakes and ladders would have been a much more interesting game had it been invented with the knowledge that female snakes had two clitorises.
Someone's going to have to update the illustrations at the very least.
Just go in and add it to...
Well, I mean, I don't understand the scepticism about this area of science. I think it's groundbreaking. I think it's wonderful. I think it makes me, as a human, feel grateful that we lucked into the version of a horrifying mating ritual that we have. It could be way worse.
Well, exactly. I mean, do you want to come out of it, first of all, with not being able to do the deed, and secondly, covered in absolutely covered in semen, which I guess you then have to sort of figure out how to put to
it's
use.
It's a niche.
I assume some people are into that, yeah, but certainly not if you're trying to have a child. That's very...
The fire hose approach.
Oh, God. One of the researchers has been documenting fellatio in fruit bats, which is like, that really is a question of, who decided we needed to know that? Because
they won a Nobel Prize for that research.
I think he won an Ig Nobel Prize, which I think is that not the joke one? I don't know.
Oh God,
I could be wrong. Or like the one that you get for being doing something a bit weird.
Oh, yeah, I should have known. You don't get it for bat blowjobs.
Well, unless the bats are running the prize, and then they're like, that's the top. That's the top one.
Yeah, if they're the judges, that's the kind of the bribing.
How come this guy's won the Nobel Prize this year, and why are all the judges bats? And why do they all look so happy?
Hollywood news now, and this is the news that Darren Aronofsky, the Hollywood auteur known for sort of unsettling and mind-bending movies, is to direct an Elon Musk biopic telling the story of presumably Elon Musk's rise from merely wealthy young man to extremely powerful bajillionaire. Eleanor, you're in Hollywood. Can you unpack this story for us?
I am, and I am a billionaire. Well, what Darren did there is he looked at all the films he's made about, you know, disturbing individuals and weird situations. And he thought, why bother writing a
script? Being driven mad by the power of maths and...
Yeah. And, you know, being weird to look at. And he thought, why bother writing a script when I've got... It's all just laid out in front of me. So we're having yet another billionaire biopic. I assume it will start with Elon in the nursery, surrounded by emeralds. And, you know, it's a tough start in life. How's he going to get through that? He goes to America.
I mean, for the sake of accuracy, it was only a share in it.
Sorry, yes. No, I do apologise. It's tough. It's tough life. Tough life. Maybe it's more diamonds and sapphires in the nursery. I don't know. But, but yeah, I think it's interesting when people choose to do biopics about people who are still alive. Because... you know, the whole point is that you're covering their life, and normally that does eventually end with, you know, some semblance that there's been a narrative there. Whereas this, I don't know when he's going to make the film, but I don't see Elon leaving us anytime soon. And I wonder if he'll have to do a sequel, Elon 2, to Elon 2 Furious, where sort of catches everyone up. Like, obviously, by the end, like by the end of his life, I assume he will have procreated like at least 20 more times. So you've got to add that in. Bunch of stuff.
Well, this is the problem that Ian was saying about the 24-hour news cycle. We're still in the midst of it. We need to wait until the end to figure it out. And I mean, Elon is known for appearing on screen in various things. He quite likes a cameo. So will there be a cameo of Elon Musk in the Elon Musk biopic? Question.
Like a meta. Oh, he wouldn't like a meta cameo, would he? No, that's not good. It's not a good idea, but...
If they do another film when he dies, there's going to have to be a scene where the actor playing Elon Musk attends the premiere of the film about him, where the actor playing Elon Musk is also at the premiere, watching himself on the screen.
It's going to be like that
Spider-Man meme. Yeah.
The tricky thing about it is also the casting. Casting is so political. Mm. If they're casting, they can cast somebody who is more beautiful than you but not very good at acting, or they can cast someone who's very good at acting but hideous to behold. And, you know, how do you feel? Do you feel complimented that they've cast somebody who doesn't look like you at all but is a very excellent actor? Who are they going to cast? It's all, you know, extremely valid. Are they going to cast Timothy Chalamet or are they going to cast Paul Dano? These are the questions that we need to know.
There was a headline that I saw like on the side of this article about Timothy Chalamet that made me laugh. Cause the headline was, Timothy Chalamet, if you would have told me when I was 12 that I'd be starring in Wonka, I would have said, you're lying. And I just can't imagine a situation where someone goes up to a 12-year-old Timothy Chalamet and he says, you're going to be starring in Wonka. And this 12-year-old is just like, you're lying. You're lying about that. And I think he was a child actor, wasn't he, Chalamet?
Is he not still a child actor?
Yeah. But if he was acting when he was 12, he might be like, yeah, I guess they might. I could imagine them doing some kind of sequel or prequel.
Maybe he just didn't believe that we would have run out of ideas that quickly. They're already doing a Wonka biopic.
Yeah.
I think, what's his name? Ashton Kutcher should play him. I think he should play all the billionaires. He's already done Jobs.
How Kenneth Branagh did all the leads in Shakespeare.
Exactly, yeah. And then they'll have some kind of, like, computer-generated standoff where they all are all in one big film, like Avengers Assemble, but billionaires.
The businessman origin story I want to see is the person who invented the robotic cobbler men that go in the front of
the little old
cobbler's windows. Yeah, because when they first come up with that idea, like, and they got all the cobblers to be like, yeah, let's all have a robot hammering man in the front, the amount of money they would have made very quickly would have been astronomical, because it must be hundreds and hundreds of cobblers. But now the business model of that company is walking around the UK to try and find a cobbler that doesn't have one and then saying, would you like a little robot man who's like hammering a cobbler shoe to put in your window, and trying to convince them that that is a useful thing to do.
It's also such an odd mix of past and present and future, because the nature of the work that the cobbler man robot is doing is work that is made redundant by the existence of robots.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
What confusing thing is happening there. A robot is doing a job that a robot has taken off the thing that the robot is depicting.
Yeah, and now you can't even just have a man pretending to put a shoe together in the shop window because his job's been replaced by a robot too.
Yeah, and with electricity costs soaring, it might be cheaper just to hire like a younger boy, like instead of a paper round, who just dresses up as a cobbler and just does that movement constantly in the window.
What scenes would you like to see in an Elon Musk biopic?
The registry of the birth of the child whose name no one can pronounce. Just like a sketch, basically, where the woman's like at the desk is like, you want to name it what? And that's 10 minutes. Yeah, I mean, again, like the childhood, it's not the thing about biopics is you know, think of some of the great ones, the Ray Charles one, Nina Simone, anyone who's come from adversity, they've got a gift, they fight through, they, you know, Edith Piaf, there's a bit of tragedy there. It's, I mean, even the best and most interesting businessmen, there's not a lot of, for me anyway, on the screen, there's not a lot to see when it comes to, like, I've become a businessman. And even less so if you've already started with, as we've said, quite a bit of money. So, I mean, I wouldn't like to see any of it on screen, is the honest answer. I don't think that's going to stop it.
I mean, it is Darren Aronofsky, so I'm hoping that it just goes into the imaginative realms of, I think we start on Mars and work backwards from
there. Oh, yeah, that's good. Yeah, no, I would watch that, actually.
I'd like to see Brendan Fraser in a fat suit playing him as a baby. so it's all actors in fat suits, but then all the scenery has been made huge so that they look baby size, and all the adults are played by, like, you only see the adults from the foot to the, like, knee, and it's just elephants that have had their legs painted pink and big shoes put on them, and their dialogue is, like, dubbed in. Yeah, that's what I would like to see.
You want to see live action Boss Baby?
Yeah.
Which I believe is based on the life of Elon Musk, so...
Yeah.
It's already a remake.
That's what I want to see. I want to see him playing in a nursery and, like, asking a kid for, like, a slinky or something and the kid refusing to give it to him, and then it cutting immediately to the next day when the nursery's changed its name to, like, X, and there's no other kids in the nursery. And Elon Musk has got the slinky, and somehow the slinky is, like, a bit more racist now. and all the staff are just not allowed to leave because it's just become a part of their lives. And they want to leave, but they can't.
I mean, I'd watch that movie. And that brings us to the end of this week's episode of The Gargle. I'm flipping through the ad section at the back. Eleanor, have you got anything to plug?
You can find me on all the social medias and... what is coming up? I am going to be in Leicester in February doing 8 out of 10 Celts, which is a game show where a Scottish woman, a Welsh woman and a Northern Irish woman battle out to be Queen of the Celts. And also I will be at the Glasgow Comedy Festival. Tickets for that are about to go on sale, I think. So, yeah, just Google it, guys.
Check that out. And Ian, have you got anything to plug?
Yeah, I'm going to be going on tour next year, so I'm doing a couple of dates again at Soho Theatre and then going around the UK kind of February to April. And yeah, I guess the best place to find that out is on Instagram, because my website is very poorly maintained and Twitter has become a hellhole. So yeah, Instagram and Linktree and all the link in bio type stuff. That's the best way to find out.
If you want to support The Gargle and the Bugleverse family of podcasts, you can become a voluntary subscriber if you go to thebuglepodcast.com. You can get things like a vinyl episode of The Bugle and a monthly Ask Andy podcast, which is an advice podcast with Andy Zaltzman. You can find me online at patreon.com/AliceFraser. It's where all of my things are. I'm also on the social medias. This is a Bugle podcast and Alice Fraser production. Your editor is Ped Hunter. Your producer is Chris Skinner. I'll talk to you again next week.
You can listen to other programs from The Bugle, including The Bugle, Catharsis, Tiny Revolutions, Top Stories, and The Gargle, wherever you find your podcasts.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.